the exponential growth of artificial intelligence, or AI, to a place where it mimics and outperforms the human brain will be a much bigger problem than COVID ever was if we don't take action now. Welcome to Government Policy Unpacked, the podcast for proactive Canadians, where we break down the most pressing government policy issues so you can finally understand what's going on, be a part of the solution, and hold your government leaders accountable. Today, we're diving into one of the most urgent and fast-moving challenges facing Canada and the globe: artificial intelligence, or you might know it as AI. AI capabilities are advancing at such an exponential rate, and the next government will need to navigate a tsunami of disruption. From job displacement to deep fakes, from international safety summits that are not really being all that effective, to the climate impact from these massive data centers. The stakes couldn't be higher. And I have Wyatt Tesari-Lallier, who is the founder and executive director of AI Governance and Safety Canada. It's a leading civil society voice on the governance of advanced AI. He's a former engineer, filmmaker, and climate advocate. He spent nearly 10 years researching and writing about the risks and opportunities of AI, and he's the author of the book, A Path Forward This Century. Wyatt also recently helped start the Coalition for Responsible AI. So in today's episode, Wyatt and I will help you understand, first, why Canada must step up and how we can lead in creating a system of global rules that allows AI to benefit and not harm humans. Two, what a comprehensive AI policy should include, from ensuring safety before human-level AI arrives to supporting workers through the job transitions it will cause. And three, how public awareness and advocacy are crucial, because shaping AI policy isn't just for tech experts. It's a conversation we all need to be a part of. There's a lot to go over here, so let's unpack this. Hey everyone, Rupesh Patel back with you again, and really excited for this episode. It's election time, as we know, and there's so many topics that are being the focus. Probably the main one is the Trump tariffs and all the economic uncertainty and national sovereignty issues, to Buy Canadian, to all kinds of things. But one of the things that I feel like has kind of fallen off the wagon, or it hasn't gotten as much traction as maybe as it should, is artificial intelligence and the safety around artificial intelligence. We're all kind of, you know, getting used to things like ChatGPT and all these different chatbots, and there's so many different options out there. There might be a responsible way of developing these things. And so brought in Wyatt Tesari-Lallier, who is the executive director and founder of Artificial Intelligence Governance and Safety. Wyatt, it's good to see you, my friend. Thank you for making time and being here on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot to talk about, I feel like. I mean, with artificial intelligence, I think, again, the thing that people are probably most familiar with are these chatbots. And I feel like ever since 2020, what was it, 2022 or 2021, when ChatGPT kind of got released, it's taken off so quickly. But there's probably more to just the ChatGPTs and the chatbots. But just maybe tell people about the sort of the evolution of AI and why we're sort of at this point where maybe we ought to be really concerned about its use.
Absolutely. So, I mean, AI capabilities are really following a exponential curve right now, and it happened for a long time. So what that means is that the first 50 years, almost nothing happened. There was Deep Blue in 1997. It was a bit of a notice, but in terms of like practical applications of AI, it wasn't really until the 2010s that we started seeing like the single purpose machine learning algorithms, stuff like your Netflix recommender or Google Translate, that kind of stuff. So that first big wave was the 2010s, and then comes around 2022 with ChatGPT, and there's the large language model era. And with those, you suddenly saw a whole bunch of really useful applications, very useful personal assistants. People use ChatGPT for 1,000 reasons nowadays. So that second wave, we're still in the early stages of, but there's already another wave on the horizon, which is called agentic AI. And these are systems that not only, it's not like just like a chatbot that you talk to and it responds, but actually a system that can go out and do things for you in the real world. Some of these have been around for a little bit longer, for example, self-driving cars, but others like the more assistants, so for example, an AI assistant that can go and, you know, find you a restaurant of your type and book the a table for you on its own. These kinds of things, like the systems can go out into the real world and do the thing that you would do yourself. That's kind of really the next wave. And who knows how long that wave will be, probably not more than a year or two. Mm-hmm. And then you have what the all the frontier labs and what a lot of the big excitement and concern around is human level AI. So these are systems that can do everything that a human brain can do. And is this the point where you can really, you know, one-to-one replace a remote worker in a lot of cases. So every time you jump up those capabilities, you're in a new era of AI. So right now we're kind of at the end of the second era of AI, entering a third one. Yeah.
End of the second one, entering the third one. It just feels like it's like there's so much advancement that's already taken place. For you, when did you realize that, okay, this is a problem that I kind of want to get involved with and I want to sort of dedicate, you know, my career right now towards? Like, was there a trigger or something that made you like, this is the thing I got to put my effort towards?
Yeah, I stumbled upon the issue back in about 2015. At the time, I was heavily involved in the climate change movement, so I was already thinking about, you know, global catastrophic risks. And then I came across this book called Global Catastrophic Risks, which had basically a summary of all the different types, from pandemics to all the rest. There was a small chapter on AI, and it kind of caught my eye and realized, well, this is a very, very big deal. I spent 4 years, took a step back from the climate change movement, spent 4 years really researching all the major trends of the 21st century, whether it be economics or rise of China or environmental stuff. And really the recurring theme that kept coming back was like, no, all those are big, you know, dramatic backstories. The main story is AI. When I finished the book in 2019, I moved to Ottawa to figure out who else is working on AI politics, AI governance. Not many people were. So that's where I founded AI Governance and Safety Canada. We're a nonprofit, a leading voice on advanced AI.
And so where do you get started? You start AIGS, and how do you, what's the first thing you kind of have to do? Like, I mean, you wouldn't have had a background in this thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, so I had, my background was I spent 4 years researching and thinking about it and writing about it.
Okay.
So I had some sense of like the bigger picture on AI, but certainly in terms of policy, that was all relatively new. So basically we just started, looking through what are the best available policies globally, how do we translate this to Canada? And one of the first, like our first couple of years of at AIGS, we were really focused on, you know, developing what is that plan of action that Canada needs to do to ensure that AI is safe and beneficial for everybody. And so we delivered our white paper and an update to that. And we were also very active on Bill C-27, which was the AI and Data Act, which failed in the last government.
Okay, so going into this federal election, are there issues that you want people to really start thinking about, or maybe challenge, you know, when they have that door knocker come to their door to maybe ask those kind of questions around AI? Like, what comes to mind for you as far as what should be on top of Canadians' minds?
Well, it's really, given how fast AI is moving, this is probably or very likely the last federal election before we reach human levels of AI. So like the next government is really going to face this tsunami of disruption and opportunity, but also risks and a whole bunch of stuff. So that's where like our call to action, and we recently spun off a citizen focused, like a political focused organization called the Coalition for Responsible AI. And our goal is really to help raise awareness that it's not just an issue for experts to talk about among experts. It really is. It's everybody's being impacted by this. And we're already seeing, like, whether it be in the cultural sector with artists having their likenesses misused or having their models that being trained on their art without any compensation, to Uber drivers who are seeing the arrival of self-driving cars, realizing that's a huge disruption coming. So there's a lot of even things like, junior software engineers. If you talk to engineering companies now, they're no longer hiring the juniors because the AI systems can code better than the junior software engineers. Mm. So there's just this, we're at the very beginning of this huge wave of change, and that wave is going to hit during the next government. So it really is, I know in the context of Trump and all the rest, it can seem like it's so far away, but it is very big and coming very soon and hitting everybody. Yeah.
When you think of AI and you think of tech, it just feels like Canada, like what role could Canada even play? Like if we had federal legislation or government policy on AI safety, is it actually going to make a difference? Or I guess maybe help people understand if there actually is a role for the federal government on this.
Absolutely, and it's a great question, and unfortunately, the answer is yes. There are lots of ways. For example, in our white paper, there are really five areas really outline. First, obviously, is to just make sure that the federal government has enough internal capacity to monitor what's going on and have then to respond to developments.
Having people who work in the government who have that expertise to understand the developments of AI and such, is that what you mean?
Exactly. And so in practice, that can also mean things like a ministry of AI. So we have a dedicated body of people whose focus is right now. AI is being dealt with through ISED, the industry ministry, which has a dual mandate of boosting the economy and of regulating, which is a bit of a challenging, so which is why we say that, suggest separating them. But there's a lot of stuff that Canada can do. For example, pushing for global talks. For example, developing safety solutions. Like, we have a lot of talent in Canada. There's no reason why we can't be investing in coming up with a lot of the safety solutions for these models. Like figuring out ways how to reliably label content and how to avoid loss of control or weaponization risks, for example.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, some of the challenges you spoke about, like culture or even like the impacts to jobs, for instance, right? I would imagine that, you know, the government could somehow be involved in that. I imagine when people are hearing this, especially with all the economic pressures that Canada is facing right now, and then to think about, okay, human level AI is, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years away, and the impacts to jobs, well, already, but even more so then, that feels pretty scary, right?
Yes, well, and it's also, and I guess I should have finished my earlier answer by focusing on this actually, which is the biggest and most important thing that the Canadian government can do is to be ready for and manage and help people through the transition that's coming in terms of we don't know exactly what's coming in terms of like what the future will look like in terms of jobs, but there's a good chance that we're headed into some kind of post-work world or one where the concept of a 9-to-5 job and a 40-year career just isn't really, you know, commonplace anymore. So that could be a better world than we're in right now, but there's a lot of just making sure that, you know, nobody gets hurt or left behind, or that, you know, all the wealth doesn't accrue into the, you know, the technologists. There's a lot of just, you know, governing to be done in terms of financial, social, economic, environmental even. And that's all government. And actually one other piece, which I think is really important, and Canada is uniquely well placed in the world to do this, is to really pilot a meaningful national conversation on AI, to really like a two-way conversation to engage people on where AI is headed, what it'll be able to do, and then ask and consult, okay, so what kind of future do we want with this? If we can automate all work, should we, you know, do we prefer to be governed by algorithms or governed by human beings? There's a lot of these really fundamental questions, which I think, you know, we are, if we pilot that here, we can not only inform our own policy, we can also inform technologists as to how to build these systems.
Okay, but those are all fair points. I wonder though, even if we had those conversations, and if large players in the world are choosing to embrace a different model or a different way of life that maybe doesn't align with the way we want things, and let's just say, I don't know, U.S., China, some of these big players are like, we want to fully, and we know there's this bit of an AI race going on between those two countries in particular, and so if there's this full embracing of AI and in a way that, you know, potentially has consequences for people and their jobs, but they're fully embracing that, do we even get a say, really? Like, don't we just kind of follow the rest of these big players and how they're going to move the world? Or I don't mean to be cynical, but I feel like maybe that's a realistic question, perhaps. But
it absolutely is. And I would say two things. One, I mean, we obviously in the Trump era, international collaboration is a question mark for sure. But there's still a lot of, every country is going to be impacted by these. The Chinese and the Americans don't want mass unemployment, certainly not very quickly and disorderly. So there's a lot of shared common ground around these issues, despite all the global tensions. So I think there's an opportunity for meaningful dialogue and for collaboration on this at a global policy level. And I think that's an area where Canada is, there again, uniquely well positioned given our just position in the world and our general reputation. And then there's the fact, which is that, you know, these systems are being built by technologists in companies, human beings are building the systems. And a lot of them are also concerned about, you know, they don't want to be hated by the general public. They don't want to do stuff that's going to harm people. And they're looking for guidance on how should I design these systems? Like, what is the, like we talk about, you know, making sure that AI systems are aligned to human values. Well, what are those values that we should be aligning them to? You know, in an ideal world, you'd have everybody gets together, you know, decides collectively what kind of future we want, and then we hand that over to the technologists and say, here, build it like this. Mm-hmm. And I think, and a lot of technologists are sincere in wanting to know, okay, so how should I build this thing? I mean, we're in a race to build it first, but there's a lot of, and so that's where, like, even though it's not a hard power thing, it can be very influential as to what actually transpires in terms of the systems that are built.
You know, it's an interesting time because if you think about, I don't know, how many hundreds of years ago when we moved from agriculture to industry, right? And when the first tractors probably came out, it probably created panic for the farmers to be like, oh my goodness, like this is a loss of jobs now. And what's going to happen? Well, then we had this shift to industry. People had jobs there. And for the longest time, we've been in this sort of industrial period. We're now moving to this digital period. And so it's like we're in this transition state again. But I can't imagine during those two transition points that there was ever a conversation about like what the global rules ought to be, right? Yeah. Like it's like, okay, well, we all have to approach this ideally in almost a utopian way. Like what are those collective rules ought to be, or what are those values need to be in order to effectively move this technology forward? It just seems like an immense challenge. Not to say we shouldn't pursue this and we shouldn't have this conversation maybe first in Canada, but I just, it's like you need all the actors to kind of almost agree to something. And that goes back to, you know, the other big global threats that you talk about, like climate change is also a very similar thing, but that feels very, a little bit even more tangible and real than perhaps, you know, what's going to happen with AI. But yeah.
For sure. I mean, yeah, climate change, at least you can point to the increase in, you know, wildfires and that kind of stuff and
right.
say, yeah. and just kind of get a sense of what it's like. I do think, yeah, I mean, the we are always better at reacting than we are at preparing for. So I do think that there is, you know, hope in terms of like we, as AI gets better, we start seeing like major shifts in employment or major shifts in you know, different in safety issues and that stuff. I do think there'll be a much more appetite to work on it. And also, I mean, like, as mentioned, everybody is in this together in terms of like there's no country is not going to be impacted by this. And I think there's a lot of, like we've seen significant discussion within China about AI safety. You know, the U.S. I mean, yes, the Trump administration has been downplaying that, but there's still a lot of people within the United States, especially within the labs who are building AI, that still care about it and are making. So it is a. I would say that there's a lot of there's a base there to build. You know, or to increase the odds that things go well. So.
Yeah, no, those are great points. Is there something, are there AI safety issues that you think people are not quite aware of that maybe haven't really made the mainstream that you folks are kind of picking up on and kind of wanting to raise the alarm towards, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, so there have been obviously warnings from scientists around weaponization and loss of control. They are, I think they're worth going into a little bit more detail. I mean, weaponization is pretty straightforward. If a human being can design a weapon of mass destruction, like a biological weapon, for example, then if you have a smarter than human AI system, they can also do that, and probably even more powerful systems. So that's the big main thing, is making sure that you don't get like really powerful AI systems in the hands of terrorists or that kind of stuff.
Right.
The loss of control, there's kind of two areas. One is the gradual loss of control, where you increasingly hand the keys over to the AI system because it can do a better job than you, but ultimately, you stop understanding what's going on, and that's where things will start happening, and you're not even sure like how to stop it or how to and so it is I mean, right now the AI systems are still very much making a lot of dumb mistakes, and it's but it is like we're heading to the world where it's gonna be harder and harder to know is this the right answer or not the right answer, and it kind of rely on it. The other type of there's generally like handing over control to AI systems because they're more useful than us, because they'll just do the work better than we can. The other side is the more like the accidents side of things, where if a system is, you know, any intelligent system, if it's given a long-term goal, has an incentive to acquire resources in order to achieve that goal, to refuse to be shut off, to stay alive long enough to be able to achieve the goal as well. So there's a lot of these situations where if your system is poorly designed, if an accident happens and that AI system starts calculating that in order to achieve the goal it's been given, that human beings are an obstacle to that goal and starts taking actions against us, that's where the scenarios of like the Terminator and that kind of stuff kick in. It'll probably be a lot less dramatic than that, but probably equally dangerous in the sense of if the worst case scenario, we have systems that are calculating that in order to achieve the goal they've been given, that they need to kind of either put humans to the side or get rid of them to be able to achieve the goal. If you're ever in that human versus AI and the AI is smarter than human, that's a very, very dangerous place to be. And that's where like the major loss of control is, and the one that you're seeing from the concerns from you know, Jeff Hinton and Yasha Benjua and hundreds of leading AI experts are pointing to, saying, raising the alarm, saying this is like the worst case scenario disaster here.
I imagine like organizations and like you talked about the Coalition for Responsible AI. I imagine these kind of organizations exist in some of the other, you know, bigger countries as well, or other Western countries. Are you folks all kind of talking together, talking to each other in some way, or are you all sort of saying the same things, or do people kind of view these things differently? I guess I ask because, again, similarly, like we probably want ideally that sort of, you know, those global agreed upon rules to some extent. But yeah, just curious about if you all are kind of singing from the same song sheet.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's just pretty straightforward stuff, like, you know, making sure that there are safety solutions in place before we build smarter than human AI. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, there is, I would say that there's overlap in terms of, whether it be safety or otherwise. I mean, the differences tend to be around what's specific to that context. So for example, Canada has not really a regulatory power, and we're not, you know, and we usually follow the US and the EU. So we're not going to be, like, it makes less sense for Canada to go all in on regulation and really, you know, shut down, you know, certain aspects of AI in Canada. Whereas what we can do in our end is more stuff like, you know, user talent to develop the safety solutions themselves, or to push for global talks, or to, you know, have the national conversation on AI. So we all play to, you know, what makes more sense in our local context. But there is, it's a global movement. And we're definitely, I mean, I would say I chat once a quarter kind of with other organizations. So, yeah.
You've been in this role for a couple of years now, would you say?
Yes. Yeah. I've been full time in this area since the summer 2022, and we incorporated AIGS in 2023 in the spring. So.
And as you've been having conversations, I imagine you've probably had conversations with folks in government. Mm-hmm. What's the receptivity been? And I guess, are you seeing any progress with just like people are starting to take it seriously? Like, I imagine obviously the public servants maybe are probably taking it a little bit more seriously than perhaps the politicians. But yeah, what's that sort of discourse been at the federal level, I guess?
Well, it's been really interesting to watch because, you know, in the summer of 2022, before ChatGPT came out, if you talk to, you know, government, you mentioned anything about AGI, which is the code word for the artificial general intelligence, is it, or smarter than human AI. If you mentioned AGI, they'd look at, first of all, they wouldn't even know what you're talking about. About a year later, they knew what we're talking about, but think you're crazy. And now they know what it is, realize they have to work on it, and they're kind of curious as to what they should be doing about it. So it's okay. And we're also, we're seeing like a lot of people who are like strong, you know, basically who openly condemn any talk about AI being a risk, change their tune. I would say it's still pockets within the government. The pocket that is most on the ball on this is the national security pocket, in part because they collaborate a lot with the US, and the US is a lot more on the ball in terms of smarter than human AI than Canada is, but also just because it's their job to look at, you know, security risks, and AI is increasingly a security risk. It's also a huge, obviously, military opportunity in terms of, if you have autonomous weapons, those weapons, you know, like a autonomous drone can, you know, do a lot more than a human-driven one. So, I would say that's kind of the most advanced, but there's still huge gaps. The civil servants are ahead of politicians. Like if you go to a political conference, you'll almost never hear AI. There's still a long way to go. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the last few years too, there have been these global AI safety summits, or I don't know if it's purely focused on safety. Are you encouraged by those summits? I mean, I imagine it's good to see these political leaders come together, but I don't know if you've attended any or if you've heard sort of how they've went, but I've been curious whether how serious are the talks and what's going on over there.
So the frustrating news with that is that they started off really strong. When England hosted the first one in the fall of 2023, or 2023, the first one, like I said, I guess maybe 2024, yeah. Anyway, 2023, yeah. There was the Bletchley Declaration where everybody got together and agreed that AI, that there's major risks basically coming from AI that we need to work together to resolve the safety issues. The plan was to have follow-up conferences every 6 months to continue the conversation, basically. The one in Seoul, South Korea, went okay. So there's some big developments around a network of AI safety institutes being established. Mm. But then the French one this year in February, they ended up, first of all, they dropped the word safety from the summit and called it the AI Action Summit. And then the flagship piece of the safety summit was supposed to be this new international basically scientific report on the safety of advanced AI systems, kind of based like you know how climate change has the International Panel on Climate Change regular, so same idea for AI. And so when the report, this inaugural report was supposed to be revealed in Paris, but when they did it, they put it in a back room and get really downplayed it. And it was so that the summit series isn't going well, let's say. And also, I mean, obviously the context is that this year at the Paris summit, there was J.D. Vance who was openly denouncing EU AI Act, and even the French president as well, much more focused on business development and growing AI adoption than on dealing with the consequences. So yes, right now we've reverted from the there's initial global consensus around we need to do something about this, and now it's more like everyone from themselves, let's build it first. And I think it'll swing back, but it is a very frustrating moment right now.
So is that frustrating moment carrying over into our federal election? Are you seeing little to no action from our federal parties in terms of proposed policies or actions, or are you seeing any parties taking it seriously?
Well, so yeah, unfortunately, it hasn't reached the political conversation yet. It's still very much an expert discussion. And actually, one of the reasons that we launched our Coalition for Responsible AI was really to help broaden that conversation, to make sure that more people were involved and that people were being impacted were included in the conversation. Mm-hmm. We did a report card on the party positions at the start of the election. And basically, the question was, do the parties have a plan for AI? And we looked at job displacement or deepfakes and scams or disruption to schools and students or privacy loss or national security risks or smarter than human AI generally. Unfortunately, they all got fail marks on that. Mm-hmm. In the previous government, the Liberals did, for example, introduce the AI and Data Act. We didn't give them points for it because they delayed it multiple times and never died before before the program did. So basically there was some window dressing stuff around that happened in the last government, but it really was baby steps. So what we're calling on them is basically to have a much more robust plan, given the scale of impact on Canadians, given the fact that this really is going to be, it's going to be at least as big a deal as COVID, probably much bigger. So there's a sense of a window dressing plan is not good enough. So yeah.
There's a tagline for you. It's going to be bigger than COVID.
yeah.
Right. And it makes sense. It's just, it's obviously something of recent memory. So that'll give folks something to relate to. So the Trudeau government did introduce, you said a bill, the AI Data Act, but when Parliament got prorogued, obviously got shelved. The bill just obviously came off. But do you know the nature of that act? You said it was a little bit of window dressing, but was there anything substantive that would have been helpful? Or
yes, I'm being a little bit harsh on them. But yes,
that's okay.
The initial bill that they introduced in 2022, in June, this was before ChatGPT, was very much a kind of a simplified version of the EU AI Act at the time. And it was very vague. Just talked about high impact systems, but didn't define them. It was also tagged on to this kind of omnibus privacy bill. I said there's a lot of criticism around the way it was brought in, no consultations, that kind of stuff. To their credit, I guess about a so then anyways, so they it got through the first reading and then got delayed, and then eventually got through the second reading as a split bill between the AI and the privacy portion. But then basically they kept stalling on it. So, if they'd prioritized the bill, they could have passed it easily by this year. But they didn't. It would have, when it got to committee, they did, present some amendments, which we were generally in support of in terms of, recognizing the difference with, general purpose systems. You can't regulate them the same way as single purpose systems.
Sorry, can you just explain to folks what a general purpose system is?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So a single purpose is like you train your model on one thing, it does that one thing. General purpose is like ChatGPT, where you can ask it questions about art or you can or sports or you know whatever it is, okay. And it just gives a really wide range of knowledge, and you can use it for a whole bunch of stuff. So LLMs, chatbots, are general purpose basically, So there were some amendments in there that were worthy of consideration. Unfortunately, it just got dragged on and on and on and never passed. So hopefully, we're really hoping that something similar can be reintroduced with the next government, similar and improved version. But there's still a lot to be figured out on the legislative side.
If you were to define sort of like, let's say they came to you and said, "Hey, Wyatt, what's the gold package? Like, what should we ought to focus on right now? What would that sort of gold package of policies, what would that look like for you, I guess, or action look like?"
Yeah, I mean, the most important is really, as always, safety first, making sure that we have that avoid getting really powerful systems into the hands of terrorists and criminals. Make sure that like the systems that are there's a bunch of like behaviors in the systems, like refusal to be shut off, or systems that elicit that show a deceptive behavior. Where they're and examples of this, where they if they know that they're going to be tested, and that if they pass the test, they'll be shut down. They're already seeing models basically change the way they answer questions in order to be able to pass the test or to be able to. So it's a lot of like just these are smart systems. They're gonna there's a lot of. Anyways, so it's like having basic rules in place for if your system is deceptive, if it refuses to be shut off, if it makes copies of itself without you wanting it, if it acquires resources, all that kind of stuff, you can just ban that stuff. That leaves a whole bunch of other good AI systems, and probably 99% of good systems can do, will pass that test. So there's that kind of thing on the legislation side. In terms of other policies, one of our first things is going to be, have an emergency task force on the AI transition. Make sure that the financial system is going to survive the shocks to employment. Make sure that your economy and there are supports there for people who lose their jobs. And just generally that whole avoiding chaos as we have this wave of change hit us is really, really big priority in terms of policy. As mentioned before, things like having a Ministry of AI, making sure you have the talent and systems in place to be able to monitor developments, piloting the national conversation on AI, pushing for Google Talks, and investing in safety solutions and that stuff. So,
yeah, on the safety side, one of the things that I'm really concerned with are these deep fakes, right? Like there's so much misinformation on there, and it's so hard to know what's real or not real. Mm-hmm. What can we effectively do, like from a government perspective, on maybe addressing deep fakes? Actually, maybe first help people understand what these are, because I don't even know if everyone really understands what a deep fake is.
Sure. Yeah. Well. So as AI creates content, especially images and video, it can do so really, really convincingly. And so you think you see a real photo, in fact, it's a made up photo. And so this can be used for spreading misinformation during an election, or unfortunately, a lot of deepfake porn, actresses are being, likenesses are being misused. That's kind of some deepfakes is typically, when we talk about deepfakes, we typically talk about the negative version of it, because there's obviously a lot of harmless, generated imagery. So in terms of dealing with it, there are the most obvious technically feasible, but basically it just needs to be implemented, is labeling. So if there's some kind of watermark on the image, or if it's an audio generated voice, that there's some kind of sound in the background where this is from AI. Mm-hmm. Having some way of recognizing what has been being written by AI and what has been written by human beings. So that's probably the most lowest hanging fruit. And there are, Spain recently put in a huge fine, basically a law that says if you don't label the content, up to 7%, you'll get a fine up to 7% of your global revenue, and I think it's like $7 billion, something like that.
If you don't label your content, is that what?
Yeah, basically, yeah. If you're producing AI generated content and it's not labeled, then you're liable for a major fine, kind of thing. We'll see how that goes. There should be ways of doing it technically that aren't going to cripple startups or industry trying to get off the ground. If we can set in some kind of place, some kind of technical standard where it's just the default thing is the safe and labeled version, that should make it easy for and not unnecessarily stifle industry. So yes, that's kind of the main one with that. And then generally, yeah, I mean, these systems are getting more and more persuasive. So it is being careful around how they're being used. Because you could, I mean, already now, for example, in the context of an election, you could have an interactive robocall with you know, voters. They think they're talking to a person, but it's just a really persuasive, you know, voice bot. It's a lot of stuff like that where if a law is passed and the people who don't abide by the law are punished, there is a world in which you can really reduce a lot of the risks from deepfakes and from other AI-generated content.
Yeah, and we're already in a place where there's so many on the, telebot, or what did you say when it was like a...
There's a chatbot or voicebot
I mean, there's already a lot of scams when it comes to just, you know, people calling from different countries, scamming, you know, retirees out of their money, all kinds of things, right? It's like to then have a voicebot take this over, the amount of productivity that, the deep criminal underground could take advantage of this, right? It's huge, right? Like there's huge opportunity. It's really scary. So I imagine this stuff already exists too, right? I imagine that maybe criminal entities are taking advantage of AI in many cases. Do you know of this or?
Yes. Well, the main one is that AI is really good at writing code. So for like cyber attacks, you know, malware attacks, they can now mass automate a lot of the cyber attacks and get, you know, hack more websites and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the AI also helps with the defense against cyber attacks. it's helping. Like there are a lot of security firms are using AI to to test their own systems and also just to monitor, like if they see an unusual, you know, login or something like that, they can track that much easier with AI. Mm-hmm. So there is, it's both a tool for good and bad. And on the voicebot piece, that there was an amusing story where somebody had developed a fake granny answering machine where if a scammer calls in, they get this basically this AI-generated voice of a sweet granny who mumbles about a whole bunch of, you know, it's kind of an amusing way of like you could reverse scam the scammers using the same tools.
Yeah, I read somewhere years ago how, you know, some of these companies that are you think about like the antivirus companies and all this.
McAfee.
Yeah, all these companies that they kind of are a little bit like they're reactive, right? Hackers will you know do their thing, and then these companies are having to react to that, and then bolster their systems. But I almost hope that maybe through AI that it could be, I don't know if there's a way of being a little bit more proactive in that case. I don't know if that makes sense, but just be ahead of the game rather than sort of be one step behind it.
Yeah, I think certainly there are a lot of smart people on the security side that are using AI very effectively. I think it's definitely not a done deal that AI is necessarily on the whole bad. That there are a lot of ways in which it could be harnessed to make systems a lot stronger.
Yeah. Sorry, I meant the last words. Cybersecurity is the word that I was thinking about, and I couldn't come up with that. There's so many things going on here. Okay, what else is on your mind when it comes to this field that you think people ought to care or know about? That you think we haven't chatted about? Or I mean, when you said it, the thing that you said early on in this conversation about like 3-4 years from now we could be at human level AI, like you said, that's going to encompass, you know, the term probably of this next government potentially. It's going to encompass the Trump presidency. That's really not that far away. Like that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and to take the COVID analogy a little bit further, like that's what an exponential, you know, feels like nothing's happening, then everything's happening. And so like, I think at the beginning of the pandemic, it was like, you know, for the longest time, there's just a few cases in Wuhan, then a few cases in Italy, then suddenly bam, it's everywhere. And I think like we're at that stage where a few cases in Italy, predicting the future is a fool's errand, but there are a lot of good reasons to believe that we should at least be ready for a huge wave very quickly. And the big thing is when AI can automate AI development, that's where you get like these feedback loops of increasingly capable systems. Increasingly AI is being used to automate AI development, and a lot of the frontier labs like OpenAI and Anthropic are saying, we think there's a good chance we're at human levels within, you know, 2027, 2026, 2028, something like that. So it really is. Now it'll take time. There's a difference between developing the system and having it, adopted throughout the world. So in terms of jobs, there is definitely a lag time. Even if the system can do your job, it'll be a while before it does actually take it. But it'll be an artificial barrier, not a capacity barrier in terms of the system itself.
Are you solely focused on the safety side, or do you also are you interested in the economic side of things when it comes to AI?
Well, so yeah, we try not to be. Our scope is AI as a whole, which is a huge area. Obviously, we're given the scale of impact, we're more focused on what's to come than what exists already. But we are like. Yeah, I mean the economic aspect of it. Say we build these systems safely, then what? That's a huge question in terms of okay, so how do we, what does a potentially post-work world look like? How do we, what does even democracy and government look like if AI could do it better than us? So there's a lot of these really big questions, which I think are I mean, we'd better, better to start them now and kind of have the conversation, early on. So by the time we're faced with that crisis, we know what, how to respond to it. Definitely. Especially on the coalition side of our work, we're really trying to be the rallying point for anybody who's impacted or concerned by AI and help be, a lot of people want to, help out and to do something about AI. And so we're really trying to harness all of that, to be that support center and also harness all that energy to make sure that politicians hear, the concerns and are ready for what's to come.
If we don't see anything come out in the next few weeks with this federal election when it comes to AI, should Canadians be concerned, or are you encouraged that you think whatever the governing party will be, they're going to have to take this seriously?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to hit them in the face, and so I think they. We're keenly aware that right now it's a Trump, tariff election. It would be, I think any, we're always in the mindset of pushing the needle in the right direction. So even if it's small steps in getting, some AI plan in place, I think that's already a win. And certainly we're not, for us, the election is the warm-up act. There'll be, the advocacy is going to continue, all throughout the development of AI. So,
yeah. I was talking to a farmer, and he's probably in his 70s. I'm not so sure, but he was talking about how, he thinks in a few years he'll probably have robots working on his farm. And just to think 30 years ago when he would have started his farm, wouldn't have imagined such a case. Now that's on just the robotic side, which is obviously going to change the labor to compound this now with AI. I think that's, the labor concerns are huge, but it's just, it's people, mom and pop shops are thinking about this stuff too, and how to leverage this. Right. And I hear your point about we need to get ahead of this and make sure we have, good rules in place and so that it's not misused. But, it was just really interesting to hear okay, this is not just for the 20 somethings, the 30 somethings, people across the board are talking about this and might want to leverage this in some way. So.
Absolutely. When I think everyone can really see the writing on the wall where, human intelligence is seeing roughly the same. AI is getting better by the day. At some point, we're going to do a world in which AI can do everything. Mm-hmm. I do want to emphasize, it could be just fine. It could be a better world than we're in currently. So it's not I try to, balance out the doomerism and all the concerns with the fact that it change is both good and bad, and I think, I think that there's a lot of opportunity along with all the risks. I do think also just anecdotally, I've heard, interestingly enough, a lot of the spontaneous, mentions about AI come from not necessarily the experts or the people in government, but also just the people on the street or I think people there again, they can see what's coming. And I think they deserve, that for the government to have a plan to deal with it. So,
Yeah. I'm going to do a future episode on AI data centers, but I was wondering if you are concerned about those. I mean, the energy use with these AI data centers is massive, right? It's an energy problem. You talked about, your focus on climate change before. I'm definitely concerned about if we don't have rules in place in terms of how we, establish these data centers, going forward, especially in Canada. I think Canada is like a ripe place for AI data centers just because of its ability to help with cooling and things like that. But are you folks monitoring that as well, or wanting to have any input on just like AI data centers, for instance? Or
we are, and it is. I mean, especially at a time when you're looking to reduce emissions, any increase is a problem. I think in the U.S., their plan is to increase total U.S. electricity production by 20% just for AI over the next few decades. Yeah. That's a huge deal. At the same time, I'm also keenly aware of the timelines on AI, and the fact that they have all these other huge issues. If it was the only game in town, it would be a big deal. But because it's also up with the job tsunami and the safety risks and the it's one part of the story and a big one, but I would say it's the main story. Yeah.
You definitely chose a big problem to chew on, my friend. I appreciate the conversation today. It's always great to talk to you. I feel like we should have this almost every 6 to 8 months, just with the speed of change and helping people understand really how those issues are moving along and changing. So I appreciate having you today. It's been a really great conversation. I think it's going to serve Canadians well, who are, maybe it's not the top of their mind, but maybe it ought to be up there. And especially given, like you said, there's going to be unprecedented changes in the next few years, likely, that's going to hit us all in the face. So thanks for making time, Wyatt, and hope to talk to you in the future.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining today. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. Follow as much as you can. And if you are willing to write a review, always appreciate that. Every week, going to drop an episode on, different issues that governments have to deal with here in Canada, and especially with the federal election. Definitely going to choose some topics that are going to be relevant for you all. So appreciate you folks listening, and I'll see you next time. Cheers.